Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
My very educated mother served us 9 pizzas. Sound familiar? Or maybe you know, my very excellent monkey just sat under Noah's porch. Mnemonics like these have helped generations and generations of American schoolchildren learn the names of the planets in the solar system: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. That is, until 2006, when the international scientific community kicked Pluto out of the planetary club, and in doing so, turned the world upside down for millions of Americans. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson initiated the recategorization of Pluto in the year 2000 when, as director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History, he chose to exhibit a model of the solar system without little Pluto as the 9th planet. He joins me now to talk about his new book, The Pluto Files: The Rise and Fall of America's Favorite Planet. So, Mr. Tyson, you're the guy who got Pluto demoted to a dwarf planet. What do you have to say for yourself?
Well, I didn't like Pluto. First, Pluto had it coming. Let's just establish that, first of all. Okay. Second, it's not like I demoted it. In the museum exhibit, we just said, take a look at the solar system. We have Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. They're all small and rocky, and they're more like each other than any one of them is like other stuff in the solar system. So that became a group. And then you look at the asteroid belt. That's a group. And then the gas giants. That's a group. And then the icy bodies in the outer solar system. That's all we did. And the New York Times discovered this fact about what we did, and a page one story appeared titled, "Pluto Not a Planet? Only in New York." And that's when all the hate mail started coming in from elementary school children. I had this 5-inch thick file of paper correspondence, but some of the letters sort of rose above the rest in terms of how innovative or how clever or how charming they were. There's a letter from a girl, Madeline Yost, who said, you know, "Dear Dr. Tyson, why did you take away my favorite planet? Here's a picture of it. This is what it looks like. Put it back in. Write back soon, but not in cursive. I don't know how to read cursive yet." That's the cutest thing.
So why were people really ticked off at you and so upset? Science is constantly changing. Why all the upset about Pluto?
The upset wasn't everybody. The people who were most upset were Americans. Because an American discovered it. Europe, they couldn't care less what you call Pluto. And so thinking long and hard about this, I could not help but blame at least part of this emotional attachment on the fact that we have a dog named Pluto, owned by Mickey, drawn by Disney. What else do we have to show the world but, like, our computers, our jets, and Disney?
So in order for the vote to come down against Pluto, the scientific community had to define what planets are. So, Neil Tyson, tell me, what are planets exactly, and what else do we know about the nether regions of our solar system?
So they got, in the end, defined by vote to be an object large enough to be round, because if you're large enough, gravity forces you to be round. That's criterion number one. Number two, do you dominate all other objects that share your orbit? If those two criteria apply to you, then you are a planet. Pluto is round, but there are thousands of other objects in orbit with it in the Kuiper Belt of Comet. It hasn't cleared its orbit. It's a dwarf planet.
Is that politically correct, though? I mean, is it fair to discriminate against dwarves?
No, but science. Actually, I have to say quickly, when Pluto was demoted, Mickey Mouse issued a memo to the Disney community saying that it's okay that Pluto is demoted because the 7 dwarfs will now welcome him as an 8th dwarf. So, and those dwarfs are no less lovable for being dwarfs. In fact, they're more lovable. So they voted that Pluto would not be considered a planet, and a new word was introduced for round objects beyond Neptune. They're called Plutoids. So Pluto is the sort of the benchmark case of a Plutoid. And there are many people who didn't like the vote.
This all sounds very political. In fact, even though the scientific community changed the nomenclature there, a couple of states refused to accept that Pluto is a dwarf planet. I'm looking, as a matter of fact, in your book, you have in your appendix, California legislation relative to Pluto's planetary status. It says that the mean-spirited International Astronomical Union decided to disrespect Pluto by stripping Pluto of its planetary status and reclassifying it as a lowly dwarf planet.
Yeah, this is actual legislation that was passed in California. California was not the only state to propose that kind of legislation. It also happened in New Mexico, a longtime state of residence for Clyde Tombaugh, discoverer of Pluto. In New Mexico, if you cross into the border, they declare, no matter what else the astronomers say, in New Mexico, Pluto is a planet by law. So I was impressed at the level at which all factions of the public participated in this conversation and the dialogue. It's extraordinary.
What about Jupiter? Now, as I understand, in fact, I think Neil Tyson once told me that Jupiter gives off more energy than it takes in. So
that's right.
Isn't it some kind of a star rather than a planet?
Well, so here you go. So rather than have the word planet refer to something so large and gaseous and energetic as Jupiter in the same breath as something as small as Pluto that's icy, that's not any longer a useful word if both of those objects are in the same classification. So why not think of the solar system as all kinds of objects that you might want to think about and talk about? Jupiter gives off more energy than it takes in. That's a certain kind of planet. In the old days, all there were points of light in the sky. Maybe you knew what color they were. So you put them all together, call them planets, you're done. But now we've been there. We've landed on them. We know what they're made of. They got magnetic fields and atmospheres and methane and carbon dioxide and moon systems and rings. And there's too much else to talk about to sit there and smile because you can recite the names of what you think is the important category called a planet.
By the way, you mentioned methane on other planets.
That's left out, yeah.
So what's going on with what's this about methane on Mars? I mean, you get methane from a garbage dump. Does that mean that something is rotting there?
You can get methane in a bunch of ways, but one of the easiest ways to get methane is by the action of microbes. Microbes that digest their food in environments where there's little to no oxygen. And not only that, methane doesn't last very long chemically. So if you see it anywhere, as it has been discovered on Mars just recently, if you see it, it means it's been freshly made. So what's tantalizing is the prospect that this methane is a biomarker for the actions of microbes deep within the soils of Mars.
Which would mean, of course, life on Mars.
Life on Mars. Not the kind with antennae and ray guns, but microbes would be just fine. If you're a biologist, any kind of life at all to compare with life on Earth it would transform the field.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is an astrophysicist and author of the new book, The Pluto Files, The Rise and Fall of America's Favorite Planet. Mr. Tyson, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're downgraded to dust in the black void. It's hard not to feel a bit destroyed.
On the next Living on Earth, we travel to Bulgaria, where gypsy buskers used to perform with dancing bears in exchange for money. The bears were often mistreated, but now they have their own retirement home with fresh fruit meals local people could only wish for. It's a bear's life in Belitsa next time on Living on Earth.